I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere. Not like here. Here everything is soft and smooth.
Desert worlds can be harsh, the heat deadly, miles of sand inhospitable, canyons, mountains, and rock faces where even the few plants, if any, struggle to survive. Water, the key ingredient for most life, absent, becoming mythical and sacred when it can be rarely harvested. It comes as no surprise that a world so hostile to life itself would create flora, fauna, and cultures that reflect back their tenacity and will to survive in such an extreme environment. One desert world has become an exemplar of all these features, and despite being a backwater away from major trade routes and galactic population centers, will find itself at the center of intergalactic conflict and the cause of the death of an empire.
Geology and planetology. The desert planet is the third in its solar system. It orbits the star Canopus and features two moons. The world was covered in hot deserts of sand and stone, lacking any other form of biome. The world appeared a dusty brown, with a little cloud cover due to a lack of moisture, and had no surface water to speak of. Ancient legends of the indigenous populations, confirmed by geological surveys and planetologists, suggest that the world was not always so. These stories speak of an ancient, lush world, teeming with oceans, greenery, and life in abundance. After an ecological disaster, thought to be introduced of a foreign species, the planet entered into a death spiral, culminating in the loss of almost all of its water and the desertification of the entire planet. Ecology.
Some might think that the desert is completely devoid of life. Although it is much more difficult, namely due to the heat and lack of water, it is not impossible. And plants and animals that are willing to fight and adapt to their austere conditions can carve out a niche and even thrive. This world, for all its inhospitable nature, is yet teeming with life. The air composition is comprised of 75.4% nitrogen and 23% oxygen, and trace amounts of other gases. With such high oxygen content, humans could breathe without the need for respiratory gear, although some do adopt special masks to conserve evaporation from water and to protect their airways from sand and dust. A harsh climate makes a harsh existence, both for the flora and fauna of the desert world, but as well as the civilizations that are built on it. Although exceedingly rare, some plant life managed to adapt to the arid climate. In other cases, plants were imported from other worlds and could be maintained with exceptional care and water. However, these practices were reserved for the few who could afford more water than one would need to drink. Such plants include poverty grass, ephemerals, scotch broom, low lupine, dwarf tamarisk, shore pine, candelil, sugaru, and bisnaga. Beyond the plants, animals too found ways to survive. From minute scavengers to gargantuan megafauna, some animals made the desert their home, such as burrowing animals like kit foxes and kangaroo mice, the desert hare, and the sand terrapin. Predators including the desert hawk, dwarf owl, eagle, and desert owl, and arthropods, namely the scorpion and centipede. The desert bat and the sand trout would grow to immense sizes.
Sociology.
Just before dawn, they came out of nowhere, a hunting party of Tuscan raiders. Your mother had gone out early, like she always did, to pick mushrooms and grow them in the evaporators. From the tracks, she was about halfway home when they took her. Those Tuscans walk like men, but they're vicious, mindless monsters. 30 of us went out after her. 4 of us came back. I'd be out there with them, but after I lost my leg, I just couldn't ride anymore until I heal. I don't want to give up on her.
The cultures that evolve on the harsh dune seas often create strong survivalists and tough peoples. The people who dwell on the sands share a strong honor-based culture, are wary of outsiders, and distrustful of foreign technology. They often conduct raids against off-worlders and use ambush tactics, relying on their familiarity with the desert to aid them in their raids. They often attack settlers, usually when they encroach on their territory, but have been known to peacefully negotiate with foreigners as well. Though this is less common and rare, covering themselves head to toe in cloth wrappings, they protect themselves from the sun, wind, and dust. Along with learning not just how to live, but how to thrive in the desert, these people have learned to master the local fauna, even utilizing large animals to their advantage as mounts and beasts of burden. Not all the world is sand, and large rocky canyons and formations dot the landscape as well. These features provide natural shelter for the people of the dunes, who build shelters and concentrate in tribal villages under their protection from the heat and terrible sandstorms, but are largely nomadic, wandering off the surface of the world. The vastness of the world is also a perfect hideaway for fugitives who would like to escape the notice of the Empire. Some, showing a certain level of tenacity in the face of the desert, earn the respect of the people of the sand and may find themselves invited into and even adopted into a tribe. Moisture and water is rare and sacred. Due to limited access to supplies, local tribes had to scavenge and recycle whatever they can, fluids included. Settlers around the world have adopted methods of extracting moisture from the very air, selling the condensation back to the indigenous and local populations. Other settlements exist as spaceports and trade hubs, where spice is shipped and sold for off-world consumption.
They worked chaos in the machines, so they destroyed themselves. The builders fought back, laying waste to the green that had been misused with fire from above. Translation: soil became glass, grinding to sand. But the fight was long planned, and his people were safe. Deep in cave homes carved from valley wall, they were free. Editing, if I may, Master. This section of his tale details several millennia of the long walk, their nomadic wanderings as they accept their identity in a desert world. Rather than strain my circuits on his dialect, might we just assume there was much fighting over who had...
Spice and crime.
The more civilized settlements on the world are also hotbeds of intrigue. The Empire has found purchase in these settlements, taking control of fortifications and local political institutions. Governorship involved a complex tension and balance of alliances between criminal elements, local authorities, and the indigenous populations, as well as commercial activities. Spice is an invaluable commodity in the galaxy, and its trade has made fortunes for noble lords and crime lords alike. smuggling the exotic commodity harvested from the desert to be shipped off-world by smugglers. While the Empire exhibits an iron grip, it is somewhat slackened by local crime lords, and typically they negotiate an understanding with the local authorities to allow them to continue in their illegal operations, for a nominal fee, of course. Spice can have a peculiar effect on users, causing them great hallucinations and expanding their conscious mind, making them highly attuned and aware. Its trade makes the desert world a hub for the product, as well as other contraband, such as weapons and narcotics, and small bands of criminals and outlaws would find purchase on the world, adding an element of criminality to contend with by any legitimate rulers. Different imperial agents contended with local crime lords from different extremes. Some would rule with an iron fist and actively rout out smugglers with violence, while newly arrived administrations sought to deal with the endemic criminal element through payouts to turn a blind eye to their smuggling operations. Of all the desert worlds in the galaxy, Arrakis would cement its place in history after the betrayal of House Atreides, the graveyard of the Carino Empire, and would become the seat of power for a new empire. For he who controls the spice controls the universe. Falcon. This is Jordan.
This is Christian.
And today we have a very special guest, my brother, the one and only Skylar. Say hello.
Hello.
So before we get into the episode, I just wanted to thank all the beautiful people who brought this episode to you, who made it possible. They are our patrons. If you want to support the show and get access to all the bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/StarLores. You can also support the show as well on Spotify. If you're a subscriber to Spotify, you can subscribe to member episodes if you're not interested in signing up for Patreon. And yeah, other than that, you can, you know, just don't skip the ads. Listen to the whole ad. we get more money that way. Yeah, that's actually.
Also, I've been screwing all these. Yeah. I always skip.
Well, stop it.
Yeah,
stop. Just let them play.
Yeah, we want to thank everyone for their support. Also, even if you can't or don't want to support financially, give us a rating and review or share the show with people who you know would enjoy this content. That also really helps out the show. Really strongly encourage people to do that. If you want to reach out to us with your fan fiction, your Star Wars collections, or anything else Star Wars related, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Discord. Look for all those links in the description of the show and reach out to us. We love to hear from you guys. Also, any corrections or suggestions or just general comments about any of the episodes, feel free to reach out. You can also find us at StarLorsPodcast@gmail.com. You can email us there as well. Now that that's all out of the way.
April Fools. If you haven't caught on to it yet, we were not talking about Tatooine this whole time. Our ship has seemed to have gone through a nexus of sorts, and we found ourselves in a completely different universe, orbiting another desert world called Arrakis. Yeah, Dune and Star Wars is kind of the theme of this episode. There is an immense influence on George Lucas's work. For those who aren't familiar with the Dune universe, Kind of hoping that this episode will maybe spark an interest in it for you. If you are a big fan of it, hopefully you caught that in the episode. Go back and listen to it for Easter eggs.
Also, at the time of releasing this, the blockbuster movie is out. Dune 2 is out. So we thought
watch it. I wish they were paying us to add.
Yeah, they should pay ads for them. So it's somewhat apropos.
In any case, I just wanted to kind of go through like a lot of the parallels, influences, and just kind of discuss those Dune and Star Wars. And that's also part of the reason why we picked up this hitchhiker, Skylar, in one of the space lanes, who is a huge fan of both universes, but especially Dune.
Multiple sci-fi universes. We could talk, we could start other podcasts even if you want.
Millions of podcasts.
Literally.
Yeah. So let's talk about deserts and the death of empires.
Wow, that sounds very kind of like here. There's there's a place where empires go to die on Earth. Where's that?
Afghanistan.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, I don't know if this is actually something that was intentional or just coincidental.
It's a bit too early, right?
Well,
is it? Isn't it? He wrote it in 68.
Yeah.
When did like
Alexander the Great
invade
Afghanistan?
Yeah, I guess. Yes. Alexander, but I'm thinking of it more as a more modern thing, right?
So exactly. So
it's almost like if it's not at the exact time, it's like prophetic that
exactly
Russia's going to go down there too, right?
Yeah. And then following that.
And then the
Soviet Union, they were there in Afghanistan in the 80s, I believe. So.
Oh, so it was quite a bit before.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, so again, don't know if that was an intentional or not on Herbert's part, but certainly apropos.
Yeah, I mean, I will actually also say,
I mean, there is prescient vision in Dune. Sorry,
maybe he was taking his own spice.
Yeah, sorry.
I do believe there, beyond just like the obvious big one, Afghanistan. There've actually been like a lot of epic failures of other empires in deserts, like the Sahara Desert. I know like Spain and stuff had tried to make incursions, but they just could not pass.
It's a massive wall.
Yeah. And other African empires fell simply because they couldn't get logistically, they couldn't support their wars going over the Sahara Desert.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like if anyone's ever, I mean, there's probably some people who are listening to this who have actually walked in real sand dunes, but when you walk in it, it's actually very hard, and especially if you're on like horseback or something that's not a track, like a tank tread or track, like you're gonna struggle. Like there's no way around it.
I've actually been to the Sahara.
Yeah. Oh, have you? Yeah. Oh, cool.
Crazy. It's just like the movie, just like infinite sand for as far as you can
and
see.
And you could just slot like snowboard down the
dunes. You had boards and everything. Yeah,
that's sick.
Very quiet too. The sand like absorbs sound. Yeah. It feels like you're in like a quiet room.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because the sandworms are attracted to sound.
Yeah. Well, right? Maybe it's because it's so quiet.
Yeah.
All they hear is the
The pulse once thing. It gets rhythmic, they come.
Hmm. Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. I think kind of tacking onto that, and then we'll move off this topic, but any kind of austere environment is hard for logistics of big military. Same thing with like wars in wintertime. Don't invade Russia in the winter. Same idea.
Yeah.
Just with the desert thing. Also, fun fact, tundra is considered desert as well.
Yeah.
So desert doesn't necessarily mean sand. Yes. Snow can also be a form of a desert.
Yeah.
So that makes Hoth a little less creative. It's really just another desert world.
Correct. that I always like kind of thought.
Yeah.
There's just a real quick side note. There's a really cool old game from like the mid 2000s.
Get closer to your mic.
From the mid 2000s called Lost Planet. And it's basically
that.
Completely based on a Hoth like, but it's also Dune. Like there's sandworms in this game, but it's like, but it's all frozen. Everything's frozen. So
instead of sand. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the exact same.
Yeah, I remember that
game. It's the exact same motif. Yeah, it was great.
You have to get like heat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Power your suit.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Yeah. So moving on from that, George Lucas has actually cite a Dune. Like, it's very obvious to anyone who's a fan of both universes. But
Tatooine is, and Spice Smuggler.
Yeah, we're going to get into a whole list of things that are similar here in a minute.
The fact that he started the story, like the movie story on
Tatooine.
On Dune, basically, is pretty crazy.
He just took it in a different direction.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
But he's credited. So Frank Herbert, again, for those who don't know, is the author of the original Dune series. And he actually joked, because Herbert was around, he's dead now, but when the first Star Wars came out, he joked that he was considering suing Lucas because of how similar their stories are. But later he kind of like retracted because people took it seriously, and he's like, at least he can pay for dinner or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
So.
And Lucas has said that he took inspiration.
Yeah, he's explicitly said,
no, like Dune was, I could also point out some other, I think Dune has had a huge influence on Warhammer lore as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the whole God Emperor thing literally comes from Dune.
The Boltarian Jihad, being against machines.
Yeah, and, the whole against AI, they literally ripped off Dune like crazy, which... I mean, you'll have to go back to Lorehammer to find those episodes, which is still, they're still around. But yeah, like it's had an immense impact on multiple sci-fi universes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is the case for a lot of early sci-fi, even things like Starship Troopers.
Yep.
And they all came out like in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yep.
And yet like influenced the sci-fi of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So
yeah.
It's very, very cool. And on that note, talking about universe crossovers, Kevin J. Anderson and Frank Herbert's son, Brian. I believe it's Brian.
I'm not sure.
It is. I'm
Took over the series and kept writing books. And for those who recognize the name, Kevin J. Anderson is a pretty prominent Star Wars author, along with a bunch of other universes.
Anderson He's awesome.
Has quite the bibliography. But just an interesting overlap even there with... It's not like there's a bunch of different authors working on Dune. It's really just Frank Herbert, then his son, and Kevin J. Anderson. So he is quite... And I wonder if some of his writing influences go back and forth, too, because he would be writing Star Wars very shortly after writing...
Like, right
the
after.
The other Dune novels. Yeah,
yeah, so yeah, absolutely.
Even in that, there's crossover.
I don't know. I think he did a pretty good job, but there is crossover, but I don't know, man. Like, an artist like that, in his mind, he compartmentalized, I think, pretty well both universes.
Yeah.
Like
he does other stuff too.
And it's not just like
Star Wars or Dune.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so let's kind of get into a list of similarities. This may or may not bring people maybe from the Star Wars universe into the Dune universe if they haven't crossed over already, but just maybe hearing about it. I know as a Star Wars fan, I was actually never really interested in Dune early on. Big fan now. But it just, I don't know, it never resonated with me the same way as Star Wars had.
I do feel like Dune maybe appeals a little bit to more mature audiences.
And that might entirely be it. Yeah. Like I remember trying to read the book early on and it just didn't.
Mm.
I didn't get past like the first chapter. And then now as an adult, I go back and read it and I'm like, can't stop.
When was the first time you read it? Like how old were you?
Man, like not even teenager, like maybe 10, 11.
Oh yeah, that's a little early. Yeah. I read it when I was like 13. And it was still hard for me to get through, but like eventually once when I was a young reader reading something like that, it takes a while for you. Some readers are more developed. Like my wife, she's like, she was crushing like adult novels when she was 10 and no problem. But for me, like...
We know you struggle to read either.
Yeah. No, I struggle so hard to read. No. Actually, that's the one thing I can do. The one thing. I can't add or subtract, but I can read. the payoff for me, and if you're a young person listening to this and struggling maybe with reading something like this, is the payoff is at the end when it all comes together in your mind and you realize how epic what you just went through was. Like it's crazy. Like do it. Even if you're an adult and you struggle, like a lot of adults now, like adults younger than us, 10 years younger than us or whatever, probably hardly even read books. Right.
Yeah, it's definitely,
but if you are forcing yourself to do that, like go through it, the journey's worth it. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And even on that note, actually thinking of books and crossovers, Game of Thrones, I got very strong Game of Thrones vibes from Dune.
Yeah.
Right.
The
yes.
houses and the infighting. It's and the original.
It seems like the precursor.
Correct. Yeah. So I wanted to. It's funny because I was thinking about this too before I came here. I was like, man, there's just. This book has influenced so many things, or you can at least see how it touched. Like this book is not like other fantasies. It's not like the Chronicles of Narnia. It's not like Lord of the Rings, which would be similar.
Well, I would say it's almost like Lord of the Rings in the sense that it touches all the fantasy worlds, right?
It does, but not in the same way. Not in like it goes more Game of Thrones. Like it goes way more like there's way more drama. Whereas like Lord of the Rings is kind of like a higher fantasy kind
okay,
of.
Okay, I
like,
see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. Like it's not as visceral and like this. There's plan. Oh, a big saying in Dune is plans within plans. That's actually kind of gets lost in. I think the latest movie they don't really. Did they say that a lot? I
don't know if they say it a lot, but I vaguely remember hearing it. But maybe, I've also been listening to the audiobook, so that might be crossing.
Okay, yeah. But yeah. Like that's a big thing in the Dune universe is there's always a plan within a plan within a plan. And then, of course, if you extrapolate that to something like Game of Thrones, I mean, Game of Thrones is just one plan inside one plan.
Yeah.
It's planception, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's I really do feel like Frank Herbert... he's sort of like the biggest influence on modern science fiction. You know, like all the precursors before him was like Isaac Asimov, H.G. Wells, and yep. those kind of guys. But I feel like Frank Herbert is like the, I don't know, almost the 21st century. He like started the 21st.
The space opera?
Yeah.
Would you say maybe?
Isaac, no.
You think Asimov was
Asimov
the space
opera? Yeah.
That's fair.
What's his fame? Foundations.
Yeah.
That's like a space opera. No, I would say that started the space opera.
You're right.
But Herbert probably like perfected it.
You know?
Like really
like
made it more of a
sharp. Yeah.
Yeah. Foundations is just almost too big of a story. Like it covers thousands and thousands of years.
Well, Dune does too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but it does. It still has like stories that it kind of, I don't know. Foundations is a little different, but
might be. Foundation has too many like. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
I digress.
No. Well, kind of
we're not digressing. We're talking about everything.
Yeah. on that note, actually, and kind of sticking with the story themes, Dune does, whether for better or worse, follow kind of the hero's journey narrative, which, of course, every story that follows that pattern is going to have some similarities and crossovers. Again, whether or not that was intentional, either on Herbert's part or on... Lucas, well, it was intentional on Lucas's part. We know that. But whether or not it was intentional on Herbert's part, hard to say. If you listen to our Hero's Journey episode, you can hear my contentions with the Hero's Journey and people kind of ham-fisting any story into that
formula.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say one way or the other, but there are some parallels and patterns that you can certainly pick out. One of the most significant ones in having to do with them. Oh, also, I guess before we go on, just in case, spoilers, in case you haven't read or seen the movies. But one of the main points of Dune, or the main story arc, I guess, that you start with is the story of Paul Atreides, who does fit into this chosen one narrative arc. But also succumbs to corruption, which is very much in parallel with the story of Anakin Skywalker. Also kind of his origin being on Tatooine, again, that kind of desert thing. A lot of times people think about Luke on Tatooine kind of being the parallel, but there are even similarities between Anakin's story. Keeping with that fallen, paladin kind of narrative story arc, another parallel specifically between Anakin and Luke now is the discovery, the big discovery, a big claim to fame for Star Wars, is the reveal of Darth Vader being Luke's father. And Dune has a very similar narrative hook. Again, spoilers. Turn it off now if you haven't read or seen the movie. Is the discovery that Paul's grandfather is the big villain of the Duneverse. Again, how closely Lucas took inspiration, hard to say. But it certainly, you can see very direct parallels in their narrative arcs. One big feature of the Dune universe that everyone's aware of is the sandworms. Just massive desert beasts that live beneath the sand burrow beneath the sand. Star Wars.
The Sarlacc.
Not the Sarlacc, although the new Sarlacc, the Sarlacc look a lot like the new interpretation of the sandworms in the new movies.
Okay.
With like a big maw with all the teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
The Krat Dragon.
Oh,
it's technically a worm.
Yes. So,
is it?
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the definition of the early use of the word worm from like fantasy, like real life fantasy, like the medieval era.
Okay.
W-Y-R-M, worm was a word for dragon.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, but I have seen that spelling before. Yeah.
Yeah. It comes from like medieval texts and like real life fantasy.
Yeah. However. I think I've probably seen it in fantasy, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, like in modern, but I'm it's talking a very, like medieval era.
Yeah, way it's of, a trope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's different, like in modern fantasy, there's different versions of dragons.
Yeah, you have wyverns
and hierarchies, I guess you would say classes of dragons. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, the parallel of the sand dragon, the Krat dragon.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, the first time we see anything to do with a Krat dragon or Krait dragon, however you want to say it, I prefer Krat. You see 3PO and R2 walking on in the desert, and there's this giant skeleton that they're walking alongside, and the skeleton really is just the spinal column and the skull.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Early interpretations of the Krat dragon would have appeared something like, you know, it could have been like a callback. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Now, as the mythos of Star Wars evolved around the Krat dragon, it kind of moved away from that into more traditional desert lizard. But with the Disney resurrection in The Mandalorian, they go back to that kind of Dune origin, and the Krat dragon becomes, again, this subterranean worm, just like Dune.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny to see even that animal go through kind of a arc, starting close and parallel with the Dune worm, and then over time kind of like drifting away from it, and then with the Disney...
Yeah, it becomes quadrupedal in the books.
But isn't the Sarlacc pit also like a worm as well? Like a long body?
It's got a big body.
It doesn't move.
Yeah,
I know.
It's just stationary. But yeah, it is.
Like certainly there's some parallels there. And the worms that were depicted early on, like when Herbert was still alive, don't look like the worms in the modern movie.
Mm.
So... Yeah, like I said, the new worms in the new Dune movies look like the Sarlacc with the big maw and the teeth and very circular. Whereas the old worms had kind of like a three-pronged mouth.
They had a beak.
Yeah, they were
beaked.
Yeah, I remember
which,
that.
That being said, the Sarlacc does have a beak in her mouth.
It technically does, yes. Well, I don't know if that's even true in the new versions of those movies. Oh, no, it does. No, it does. It definitely does.
Yeah.
They added that in the special edition. Yeah, added
so that.
That
wasn't the original. Sarlacc.
Correct.
It
correct.
Was later.
The new. Yeah, yeah. That's. Oh man.
You want to talk within lore within lore?
Yeah. You want to talk about freaking Mandela effects?
Yeah.
Let's roll out 30 special editions of one movie, and everyone can argue about what's in what movie.
They do have YouTube cuts where they've split the screen and you can watch the same scene.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And editions, versions of them.
Oh, I've never looked
into that.
Just
go on YouTube and look at any particular scene.
That's really cool.
It's interesting. Even they even change sound effects in some scenes. It's not the visuals. It's like sound effects.
Okay.
Anyways, kind of going back to the similarities. Obviously, Tatooine and the planet Dune or Arrakis, both desert worlds. Tatooine is notable for having two suns, being a binary star system, and Arrakis has two moons, a binary lunar system.
Cool.
Yeah, sort of.
Tusken Raiders, obvious influences from the Fremen. These desert-dwelling indigenous groups who are very hostile to outsiders. Obviously, in Star Wars, they don't go in depth into their culture and everything. But the parallels are definitely similar.
Absolutely.
Until the failed Boba Fett series.
Yeah. That's what they... We're not going to talk about
and
that.
And they ruined the Tusken Raiders. Yeah.
But the original plan for the Tuskens, yeah, is this hostile kind of like indigenous.
I feel like I need to rewatch Boba Fett now because I don't even remember.
Well, it's probably, like probably best.
Just to forget.
Yeah, I shouldn't even rewatch it. Yeah. Just would not waste my time.
Yeah. Still kind of sticking to the Tatooine theme.
Oh, I do remember. Never mind. I remember it all now.
It all came flooding back. It was behind a locked door in your mind.
It literally just came flooding back. I'm oh, yeah.
Basically, noble savages.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just misunderstood.
I was literally just going to say that. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. They were all noble. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was Dances with Wolves in the Desert.
Yeah. Correct. Dances with Avatar with Wolves in the Desert.
We need some new hero's journeys here.
I don't think we do. I think we just need to do them good.
Good.
Yeah, that's
that's
all.
True. Yeah, I'll give you that. Tatooine and Arrakis had both previously been lush green planets that have suffered their kind of apocalypses that turned
big
them
oceans
into deserts.
And,
yeah. Was Tatooine, can you just give me a brief, I don't remember, what was Tatooine before?
It was a
it
lush.
It was like a tropical world.
Yeah, so in and Knights of the Old Republic... there's a Tusken interaction where you like speaking to their storyteller, or their myth keeper.
Right.
And he kind of lays out the whole, their mythological telling of Tatooine.
Oh, that was back in Old Republic. So we're talking.
Like,
well,
it's already a desert by the way.
Yeah. By
so
Old
we're
Republic,
talking like ancient.
Like ancient.
The Rakata Infinite Empire like destroyed the planet.
Oh,
they like glass it.
Yeah.
And it's cool. Cause
oh,
the glass,
I do kind of remember this now. Yeah.
Which is like 20,000 years prior to.
Right.
The Old Republic.
Yeah, right.
The Old Republic.
My gosh.
Yeah.
It's cool because they glass the world and it's that glass that kind of breaks down over time and the wind and turns
becomes
to sand, right? So it's really cool. But both worlds suffer their devastation and then become these desert worlds.
Yeah.
In the case of Arrakis, it's the worms that...
They were geologically changed, though, on purpose, right? Like terraformed. They were terraformed by worms, right?
Was it... So I haven't read all of the Dune
books. Okay,
so
what happens...
Spoilers?
Spoilers for
so this is in the prehistory, but the...
I know the worms caused it, but whether or not it was intentional, I didn't
know. So they were it was a tropical paradise at one time with massive massive waters and all that. And then an old empire, a certain part of their religious secret society sect, went to that world and brought sand trouts with them. And so what all you need is a sand trout just needs to stay alive and stay away from water. So as long as you don't put it in like a pool or anything, it can stay alive and it starts the process. It starts the desertification of the world. As long as it doesn't get touched and it's given enough time, which is thousands of years because it needs to procreate and everything, but
it was an intentional
yes it was
okay.
I don't know if they knew about the spice by then. It's unclear exactly why they brought sand trouts and
for the record, sand trouts are early,
they're early stage worms, correct? Yeah. They are where the blue, if you guys watch the
poison.
Yeah, they're the poison. They're the worm poison that the mothers drink to gain their powers and all that stuff.
Well, we're going to get into the powers here in a second. but spice, just because you mentioned it there. Obviously, any big Star Wars fan is familiar with spice. Again, directly
huge,
lifted from Dune.
Except in Star Wars, where does it come from?
I don't.
Not
I think
Tatooine.
It's geological.
No, it comes from Kessel, and it comes from.
Oh yeah,
I believe it comes from spiders in Kessel.
It does. You're right. Yeah.
Yes.
So it is like the
byproduct
of the
biology. There's giant spiders. Yeah. So they just switched out a worm for a spider. Yeah. I think I could be wrong.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
We'll have to double check.
We did an episode on spice, but it was a long time ago. I can't remember.
I've done too much spice since then.
I will say
so much spice.
It's all spice, in at least in the movies, is almost more like an homage to Dune.
It's not like a central role.
Whereas in Dune, like spice is such a
it allows navigators to actually do space travel. Yeah. It's like pretty important.
The world hinges on spice. Yeah. Whereas if you took spice out of your Star Wars films,
you're just a drug addict. Yeah. But that being said, spice is mined both on Arrakis and in Star Wars. They have the spice mines, as you said.
In Kessel.
Yeah.
You can say its name. It's okay. Won't be offended. I know Han Solo did us dirty.
I just don't want to tell people where to get it.
I know
it.
Disney did us dirty with the Solo movie. But oh, by the way, there was a giant worm in the Solo movie. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah,
remember. In space. It was a space worm.
Well, they have that one in the asteroid.
The Gorgoroth.
Yeah, as they were going towards Kessel or getting away from Kessel. Wasn't that the whole point?
I don't remember the Solo movie, to be honest. That's behind my mind.
I know. Oh, man.
Anyway, but it does
stay
appear.
Stay on Dune. Stay on Dune.
Hold on. But it does. Sorry, that sorry. Big worm space slug does appear also in episode 5.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. That's true. So. Is that the same one?
I don't know if it's the same one, but it is.
Like on there are space worms. Yeah.
Moisture farming exists in both.
It does. Yep.
Dune and Star Wars.
It's a brilliant idea because it is a real thing. Yeah. You can do that in a desert.
Yeah, and it would make sense. Like, people need water to survive.
Yeah. You could do it with a tarp and plastic in a desert. Like, it's actually
collect
crazy.
Morning dew.
Yep. Yep, it's literally a thing.
And then sand crawlers, both in Star Wars and in Dune. Sand crawlers are used to mine spice in Dune, and they were mining...
Whatever they were mining.
Yeah, something.
They were mining, I think, metals in Star Wars. Yeah. And then when those miners realized that the metal was junk, I believe this happens in KOTOR, they abandon the sand crawlers, and then the Jawas take over the sand crawlers and start using them just to...
As a mobile base.
Yeah, just to roam across the sands. All right, the voice. So in Dune, there is a religious order that uses a power called the voice. Do they ever really say where it originates? It's not really, it's a kind of like a psychic power, but not.
Yeah. So the, what's the name of that order? Why am I like, so
the Bene Gesserit.
Yes, correct. So the Bene Gesserit have a entire breeding program where they have, selected certain humans through thousands of years who have special mental abilities, and eventually they become more and more psychic, and that's where that comes from. However, it's amplified with spice. So they have latent abilities just from their lineage, but once they take the spice, that's when it really unlocks the force in them.
So exactly what I was going to say is the voice in Dune, very similar parallels to the force in Star Wars.
And how we first see the force used.
It's literally what I was going to say.
Literally how we see it.
So one of the first times we encounter the force,
he's using the voice.
Obi-Wan influencing a stormtrooper, telling him what he wants him to say.
And yeah.
Hijacking his mind, which is what the voice does to people.
And in Dune, Paul overcomes it because of his strong mind or will, which is another thing.
Yeah, weak-minded people are influenced by the force. Strong-minded people can resist.
Correct, yeah.
So once again, very flagrant inspiration.
Almost rip-offs.
Yeah, almost rip-offs.
Inspiration is what we like to call it around here.
Well, I mean, I like where Lucas goes a total different direction. Everything's different. All the writers after him
And
go
what the force
totally
is to conceptually is like,
different.
Is very different than what the voice is. But you can see where the...
Psychic power. I don't know. The force is psychic
power.
It
encompasses so many more things, though. The force lets you do like all kinds of different feats, where the voice is very specific.
Well,
healing power, telekinesis.
Okay, well... We can get into that too if you guys want.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, well, I do want you want to do it now?
Yeah.
So, Paul's father, which is what Dune's about, not Paul's father. Dune is about Paul, but his father, Leto, who gets murdered in Dune. Paul eventually has children, twins by.
That was another.
Oh, was this already a thing you were going to do?
No. Keep talking.
Oh,
just the fact that he has twins.
Where the hell was that? I'm going to just lay out kind of like briefly where it goes. If
the voice.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Well, not just with the voice, but like so eventually the spice and their breeding. So when Paul has his twins, he eventually, one of them named Leto II, becomes essentially superhuman. So he's way stronger than any Jedi could ever be. Like even more so than
he's
like
godlike.
He's literally godlike. Like he takes on armies by himself. Like that's how, but he is also clothed in sandworm armor, which eventually consume him and he becomes the God Emperor, but he's half.
Where have I heard that before?
Yeah, correct. Again, we just go back to Warhammer and then all the psychic stuff too, which is like Games Workshop completely ripped off too, right? Because they follow that kind of vein of the spiritual or supernatural, but they all call it psychic, which is kind of where Dune starts out at. But anyways, but yeah, so he kind of does, he is able, and other people too are able to have almost Jedi like abilities. Well, okay. He's a one man army, like
can do crazy feats that are outside of just
like
like
it's crazy. But anyway.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Also the fact that they are like a religious order, same kind of thing with the Jedi.
Yeah.
The mentioning of twins, the birthing of twins.
Yeah, there's
very
twins,
strong Star Wars theme.
Yeah, of course.
Paul's sister Alia Atreides is very much like Leia.
My daughter is named after her.
So you are a big Dune fan. We picked the right guy. What are the chances we just ran into you floating through space?
Yeah, amazing.
So there's all kinds of parallels with Dune and Star Wars. Just also kind of going back to the Bene Gesserit, part of that religious order, they have a practice called the Prana Bindu, which is kind of how they train themselves to fight. And it almost, to an outsider, looks almost supernatural with kind of the discipline and like mindfulness that they practice. Bindu might sound familiar to a lot of Star Wars fan, being in the first draft of Star Wars, the Jedi Bendu is what they were originally called.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So, and the Bendu part comes from like Eastern religion, the Bindi dot and like the chakra, I think, of the mind. I'm not super familiar with the religious side of it, but they fight like Jedi, like supernaturally almost. So once again, like you see those parallels.
It's really cool. There's a lot of interesting things that get hit on, specifically with like the hero's journey and stuff. You were talking earlier about the similarities between like Paul and Anakin, and so one thing I wanted to bring up is the whole thing about Dune is that Paul can see into the future at some point, and he sees multiple futures. And there is a point where also Anakin doesn't have the same prescience because he's not mature enough, but Paul actually sees the results of his actions. And Paul, so there's, if you watch the movie, it doesn't do it quite the same as the book, but it breaks it down a lot quicker, where Paul is given this choice to either go south on Arrakis or stay north and fight. And all of his visions are telling him to stay north, because if he goes south, what's going to happen is billions of people will die and starve. And so, and then similar with Anakin, is he has visions of his mother, which he then later in the lore questions that he should have left the minute he had visions about.
And he could have saved his mom.
Yeah, he could have saved early. This whole thing, right? So the part, if you're going to be the hero, I think in your story, maybe, and I'm not giving you any life advice, so don't, I'm not a life advice expert, just like I'm not a financial expert, so don't take this advice. But if you know the right thing to do, just do it. That's the whole point of the hero's journey, is we learn from our hero's mistakes, right? So Paul goes south, and what ends up happening is there's a holy war and 60 billion people die. So what Dune actually is it's a warning. It's like, listen, you get all the power. You can see you can see multiple futures. You know where things end or how they could end. And he still chose to go a certain way because he was influenced by certain people that he loved too. So sometimes it's people you love. He was influenced by people he loved. And same with Anakin. He loved Obi-Wan. He obeyed his master and he did what he had to do. So I think that it's really important to like remember the follies of our heroes in the hero journey. If that makes any sense, if I could just, yeah, get on my soapbox. Is that too weird or?
No, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense? Like,
it's, yeah, I mean, you always,
it's actually tragic.
You always have to take the moral story out of a lot of these and fictions, right? Like, there is like a moral to these stories, right?
Absolutely.
There's always questions about like ethics and of course. Decisions.
And everyone's not perfectly moral as we would like them to be. Like, I have a different moral than probably the writers of this story, but the outcomes are clear. Like Paul puts humanity into thousands of years of bad stuff. Thousands of years. Like his son, his son Leto becomes the God Emperor, but he's also, once he dies, he's also known as the tyrant by the universe. They completely like reject
he's like space Hitler.
Well, literally he was space Hitler. And then it turns out that Leto II, the God Emperor, knew that he was going to be that and still went down the same path because it was the only path to get humanity out of where his father had brought them. So he knew that he would be hated at the end of it, right? So there's kind of a little bit of a like... there's a little bit of redemption, but it's not great. It's almost like Game of Thrones. Like, yeah. Just like you said, nobody's like truly redeemable, which is kind of like why I like Star Wars better than most universes, is because there's actually redemption there. Like at the end of Return of the Jedi, there's like real redemption there. There's no like,
if you discount the Disney movies. Yes.
Well, we're not talking about Disney. We are talking about Return of the Jedi. Yes. That's it.
Like the conclusion of Anakin's story is a story ultimately of redemption.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He really messed up bad, like really bad. And in the end, still redeemed.
He made it up.
Yeah. You don't get that in Dune. Like I can tell you, you can read right to the sixth book, which is, I believe it's called Chapter House, which is an unfinished novel. That's why it's called Chapter House. There's no redemption. There's no redemption. You can go to the end of Warhammer lore, there's also no redemption there.
Definitely not.
There's definitely no redemption in Warhammer, but there is redemption in Star Wars, at least as a lesson for us. Yeah. And I think that's great. So I'm always about hope. Like I'm okay sometimes when the bad guy wins, only so that a better good guy can come along and get the final victory. You know, that's what I like in stories, right? Similar to like Lord of the Rings.
So fun fact.
Yeah.
Tolkien actually read Dune and hated it.
Oh, did he? Oh, really? Yeah, see, so that doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah. That does not surprise me at all.
And it comes from that.
He literally said he hated it?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I can't believe I never came across this.
Because of kind of a nihilism.
Yeah. Yeah. And I
don't know if it's... Is it nihilist? Maybe.
Not, it's not nihilist. I think...
Cynical?
Yeah, that's what I would say. It's cynical. It's cynical of like power and religion and influences and the story itself doesn't, like you said, doesn't really have a redemptive arc. It's just a warning to people, which is fair. And I don't know that Tolkien necessarily read it that way. He probably just read it like, oh, this just seems really dark for no reason. Like,
if you read like 1984, it's like,
there's no redemption.
That's my point. So depending on how you read the text, which I feel like Tolkien would have read it from there's just no redemption in this, just darkness.
Yeah. Brave New unending. World, too. Same thing. No redemption.
Whereas
in Brave
Herbert,
New World.
Herbert, I do think, even though it comes off as cynical, it was more of a warning. Like, hey, be wary of people who develop cults of personality. Be wary of powerful leaders. Be wary of religious orders that try to control the future.
Yeah.
All these kind of elements.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then further to that, which is kind of funny, not to get way off topic here, but it is funny because Game of Thrones was kind of written, according to George R. R. Martin, as a response to Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. He's like, real life is like darker and you have all this intrigue and all that stuff.
I don't know. Which, Lord of the Rings is pretty dark. Well, so sometimes
the funny thing is like Martin doesn't like Lord of the Rings, or at least his counter to Lord of the Rings, the fact that Lord of the Rings is too black and white and like the good guys always win. And the funny thing is Tolkien did encounter the Martin version of the story. Again, going back to how it's related to Dune, in that same sense of like cynical power struggles.
Right.
Like Tolkien read it and he's like, yeah, he knows that this exists. It wasn't like some, Tolkien wasn't, I'm a big Tolkien fan, by the way.
Yeah, he wasn't naive.
Yeah, he wasn't naive. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, whereas absolutely. Martin seems to be like on this high horse about like, oh, he didn't know any better.
And that's
when Tolkien knew better and he just didn't. He's like, there's no.
I do feel like a Tolkien writes aspirational characters.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Like people, like you want to be like Frodo. You want to be like Sam. You want to be like.
Tell the story you want to live up.
I'd rather be like Aragorn. I don't want to be like Frodo. Aragorn.
Yeah. But any of those characters, like. You know, people who are
Jordan. I think you would play a great legalist in like a in like an offshoot Lord of the Rings.
We are not going there.
In any case, after we've gone way off topic, good place to end. We can drop this space hobo off here on Arrakis, and
so he can sit in his spice den and waste his life away.
No, I'm probably just gonna try and find the Atreides nukes, actually, the Atreides family nukes, and then I'm gonna rule this place.
We're gonna get out of this galaxy.
Yeah, we need to leave. Okay, see ya.